Hello, and welcome to Crit Club, a podcast where four friends watch a film from the Criterion Channel that none of them have seen before, add a dose of laudanum, and talk about it. My name is Wizard Chris, and I am joined by my co-hosts, my lovely, lovely co-hosts, Angela.
Well, hello.
Corey.
Hello.
And Peter.
Hey, it's me.
It's Peter. And it's us. It's all of us. This week, we are taking our laudanum and retiring to the opulence of a Lake Genevan villa with Ken Russell's Gothic. Released in 1986, this is a darkly surreal and truly bewildering Lost Weekend story about romanticism, erotic desire, repression, and somewhere some writing gets done, which is pretty cool. The film stars Gabriel Byrne, Julian Sands, and Natasha Richardson as romantic writers Lord Byron, Percy Shelley, and Mary Godwin as they embark on a creative retreat slash swingers weekend with Byron's doctor, John Polidori, and Byron's lover and Mary's stepsister, Claire Claremont, in tow. Also laudanum. Lots of laudanum. I chose this film as a fan of Ken Russell's work. I've mentioned Loving the Devils, and I've seen Women in Love, and Tommy, and I think a few other ones. He just has a great sense of style and flair for the dramatic, I would say, a kind of like wild creativity. And I wanted to make sure the Criterion Channel is doing a Ken Stravaganza, so I wanted to take advantage of it while we could. Of course, I have dark brooding thoughts about this film, but first and foremost, I want to hear from my co-hosts. Tell me, my fellow poets and wordsmiths, my tortured souls and romantics, did Gothic tingle your spine and tear at your bodice, or was it a horrific first draft best left on the slab? Angela, what'd you think of Ken Russell's Gothic?
You're picking me first, huh?
Really? Better than Poor Things?
Yeah. Oh, God, no. Why are you saying that? Because I was like, do you know what? Poor Things is such a better version of this movie.
Interesting.
I never thought I would say that The Lair of the White Worm was a better film than anything, but I like Ken Russell's Lair of the White Worm far better than I like this film, Gothic, which has much better production values. I'm actually disappointed by this movie because it's beautiful to look at. The actors are amazing, but this film for me is a lot like a pile of gelatinous glue that people put their hands in. It just was kind of gross.
Yeah, they kept doing that.
There's cum all over the house.
Didn't you get the symbolism? Sorry.
Yeah.
Is it symbolic? I thought there was really cum all over the house.
We'll
talk about it later.
Oh my God. So I felt this reminded me of a time where I was put to the task of babysitting a bunch of acid trippers who were having a bad trip, and no one told me that they were on acid. Mm. And so this was giving me like flashbacks and all the worst ways. And I really wanted to find some redeeming value. It's not like I'm not offended by this movie. It was interesting to watch. I suspect that had I watched it with someone else, I probably would have had a good time bantering with them and then enjoyed it more. And I have, in fact, watched Ken Russell movies with people and had a much better time watching them. So, I'm eager to hear what the rest of you say, and because it could definitely increase or decrease what will end up to be my score. I wanted to like it more. I think there was potential in this movie, but it just never seemed to go beyond the sperm stage. So. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you, Angela. I hear you. Corey, what'd you think of Ken Russell's Gothic?
Yeah, I think my thoughts on this are sort of jumbled. I do believe that Ken Russell is certainly an auteur. He has a certain style, a certain je ne sais quoi about his films. And I will say that I enjoyed watching this. This is an enjoyable movie to watch. And I definitely want to watch more of his stuff, too. I think there's a number of them on the channel right now. And I should go watch White Worm. I've not seen that before. I thoroughly enjoyed, I believe it was Crimes of Passion, which was a lot of fun. And I would definitely easily recommend to you all. Just as far as, like, it was fun to watch. But then I was also just sort of confused a lot as to what was going on. But I think that was maybe less of a fault of my own and just sort of it was supposed to be somewhat confusing. And I don't know. Ultimately, it ends on such a wet fart of an ending that
tea.
Yeah,
for everyone.
Like, oh god. Well, yeah, and the tour group and all that stuff going
on. Oh, the tour group. That's like, right.
No, you don't. You didn't have to do this. You didn't have to go there.
That's like, very funny.
So I don't know. I enjoyed myself. I enjoyed watching it. I'm glad that I watched it. I hope that I can get a little more clarity as to what the hell it was I watched after talking with you all.
That's understood. Yeah, they kind of give it the Animal House ending with a little voiceover. Where are they now? Mm-hmm. Peter.
Are you going to be third, huh? I guess that was a joke. I don't know.
Yeah, it was good.
Because I'm trying to delay because I don't know what I thought. I did really enjoy watching it. That was like a lot of fun, and I would honestly kind of gladly watch it again now, like right now. Like, what a fun kind of thing to watch. But was it a good movie? Like, do I think this was a good movie? And I really think that's just kind of a no in a lot of ways. Although there were like it's like a bad movie cobbled together from a lot of very interesting sort of parts. Angela, I really love that analogy of like having to babysit a group of bad trippers or a group of trippers on it. And I wrote multiple times in my notes, oh, cocaine wrote this movie. Because it really felt like that the writer of this screenplay, that every line he thought was genius. I don't know, but it also is definitely telling the story of like people going insane through drug use, but it doesn't seem to realize that it's telling a story about people going insane through drug use, and instead that the things that they are saying are real deep truths, despite the fact that many of their like diatribes or sort of philosophical meanderings are kind of recursive and sometimes mean fucking nothing. Like one instance, Lord Byron is like, embrace death, mortality is for poets. But then he initiates this, like, we've got to raise the dead. Like, it's like, but I thought, my dude, I thought you were just, like, there was just, like, so many, like, this movie, like, was so thirsty for vibes that I think it ruined the vibes. I think in a lot of ways, in multiple ways. What else? I guess, I don't know. Like, but I still, like, loved a lot of the demon stuff and a lot of the weird sort of, like, physical effects and things that were done. It was kind of interesting. It was like eminently watchable to be kind of trapped in there. Like it never, I think towards the end, I was like a little bit like, we're just running around the house. Like there's just kind of no point, and we're just like running from room with a weird thing to room with a weird thing. And I think that kind of wore out its welcome a little bit. I'm a little annoyed. I guess I didn't know too much about any of this historical characters. Like I knew about the Mary Shelley sort of, I knew about like the history of that, but I kind of didn't know this was that. Like I didn't know that was like Lord Byron was in there. Like, and this movie seemed to like expect you to know some of that, which I think is just kind of annoying. I really disliked the Polly character, which was seemed to be given a lot of weight because I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, why is this guy? Why do people care that this guy is poisoning himself? Like, why? It was just really.
I don't think you're supposed to like him necessarily.
But I don't know if I want to like him. I just don't know who he is or what. Like the biographer, the doctor. Like he just seems like this.
Oh, he wrote like the vampire. Like he sort of solidified what. See, I'm the English major,
again,
I guess.
Yeah.
We learned about and we learned
again,
about this during the
like
it was this summer.
Not knowing that.
Yeah, it was this summer
yeah,
where
not knowing that.
There was this giant like volcanic explosion and it like coated the entire world in ash, and it was the summer of no sun, and that's when they were all staying at like Lord Byron's, and like they dared each other to write a horror movie or a horror story, and came up with like Frankenstein and the vampire and like other stuff that became big classics.
Yeah, I knew about Frankenstein from that. I didn't know about the vampire. Like but again, I shouldn't have to. Like this isn't my job to bring that to this movie. This movie should stand on its own, in my opinion. Sorry. And so all I saw was just like this kind of annoying guy that I didn't give a shit
about.
Well,
if you were confused about anything, the voiceover narrator sort of sums it up at the end.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
It yeah. felt very much like a story told by someone obsessed with this subject, but too lazy to actually explain what the hell he's talking about.
It was, I don't know. Yeah, I agree. Also, the audio was terrible. Like, I had, like, I don't know what was going on with the audio. I don't know. I think lastly, because I've gone longer than everyone, I'm sorry. I want to say that it's very difficult for me to watch Gabriel Byrne in anything. I don't know who said this.
Who is that?
I think it might have been our mutual friend, Sean Conn, who has written into the show at times.
Thank you, Sean
Conn. Or it could have been me. I forget. Either Sean Conn or myself when we were watching the movie End of Days with where Gabriel Byrne
classic
plays
Byrne.
Satan and Gabriel Byrne sets somebody on fire. Maybe Sean Conn said, Gabriel Byrne. And it is all I think about whenever I see Gabriel Byrne.
I just know him from Usual Suspects, honestly.
Oh, sure.
I guess he was in Hereditary.
He's in Hereditary. Gabriel gets burned, spoilers, in that
he's
one.
He's also in Little Women, I'm pretty sure. Right. Yeah, like the one from the 90s. Yeah.
I eminently watchable movie, would honestly watch it again now, but really feel like it took itself too seriously and thought it was giving a truth when there was no truth and expected me to know too much about the subject matter. Wizard, what did you think about your pick, Gothic?
For starters, I'd like to say that Gabriel Byrne's hair was out of control in this film. It was very fluffy and just feathery like the wings of an angel.
Well, and so was Claire Bourne, whoever that, like, I have a new celebrity crush, and it's whoever that lady is. Like, I thought.
Miriam Cyr, who plays Claire.
I agree completely.
Yeah. She's completely adorable.
Yeah. Agree completely. Not a great actor, but.
Her eyes, though, at some point, like, her eyes are bugging out of her face. I thought she had a thyroid.
Well, they're also bugging
problem.
Out of her breasts.
Yeah, she also.
Yeah, that too.
Eyes,
oh,
eye
that
boobs.
Was actually. I was going to, the film will get a higher rating because of the eye boobs. Yeah.
Wizard, what did you think of Gothic?
So, I think that these are all very valid criticisms of the movie. With the exception that the movie doesn't explain who these people are. This is an English movie about English cultural figures. I feel like they don't need a lot of extra hand-holding on who Byron and Shelley and Mary Godwin are. I don't think that's fair. Shame on you.
I just didn't know who the Polly guy was.
Oh,
I just
okay,
didn't know
Paul
who that
Dory.
Was.
Yeah.
Like the one person who I didn't know. Everybody else, but I thought he was like slimy little weasel, and I was like, I don't give a shit about this guy.
It's because they cast Timothy Spall, and you can't help but be like, oh, that guy is a slimy weasel. Gross.
You had to have the fifth wheel.
I couldn't get a friend for the orgy. Sorry. So these are all totally valid criticisms. The sound is terrible. There's a lot of shrieking and the sound is mixed too high. Like the audio spikes quite a bit.
Mixing.
It's a very weird mix. Nobody mentioned that Thomas Dolby did the soundtrack.
Thomas, she blinded me with science Dolby.
Science Dolby.
Yeah, not the best soundtrack for this film. Well, yeah. It's very jarring.
But it's particular. I think we should talk about the soundtrack, like when you're done with your
video. I want to hear what Wizard thought.
I don't know. This movie captures a certain like vibe of horror and like that gothic horror thing that I really, really like. In this way that is, it has the vibe. It's like these actors like throwing themselves around like a carnival, like haunted house. There's spooky rooms and everybody's just running around screaming and they're freaking themselves out more than anything else. And I enjoyed watching that. It really does have the vibe of a drug weekend that's gone out of control, or maybe is exactly what they had expected. Want to talk a little bit about the ending. I think the ending is actually it's a little wet farty, but I really enjoyed how Mary wakes up and everybody's just chilling and lounging like nothing, like the night before didn't happen. They're like, yo, you guys, because I've been there, man. Like, you're just like, yeah, you guys want to get some brunch and like lie out in the sun a little bit. And I thought it was such like a quiet ending to such a loud, like in your face film. It does end with a dead baby under the water, admittedly, but Yeah, I thought it was such a fun watch. I thought most of it was nonsense. Like, I kept in mind the whole time that these are, like, English romanticists, like, the premier romanticists, like, getting super high and hanging out in an expensive mansion. So, like, of course, a lot of the stuff that they say is, like, contradictory and kind of stupid. Like, I think historically, like, Shelley's, like, maybe 20, 21 at this point. Like, these are, like, overeducated college kids who have all the drugs and a big house to run around in, and the movie has that vibe in this way that I found very charming and very meaningful, I guess. Yeah, it was fun, and it's loud and garish and lurid and it lives up to its name. It has every gothic trope that you could possibly want, and I thought that was super fun. Is it a great movie? I don't know. Is it a good movie? I'm on board. I had a lot of fun watching it. Yeah, because it is that. It is this, like, carnival ride of a film.
I don't know. I just imagine drug weekends to seem a lot more fun. Like, I would have wanted to see a little more giggling, like, more questions about, like, is this
fewer
real?
Dead babies?
Fewer dead babies. Like, fewer this if babies, this is yeah. a movie to advertise a drug weekend, no thank you.
It's a dare advertisement against yes. Loudnum.
The orgy scene was understated and made orgies yes. look not fun.
The worst orgy.
I bet
ever.
Opium orgies might be a little understated.
That's the other thing I kind of wondered. Like, we talked, Cocaine wrote this movie. I've never done laudanum. I imagine it's very difficult to do now. But there's, like, it's an opiate, like, tincture. It's a lot of running around and screaming in a movie where everyone is, like, on opiates.
It's true.
I assumed that they would all, like, lounge on couches and moan for most of the movie, which would also be very gothic.
I would have watched that right. with a lot more joy.
Yeah, I have in my notes, like, I do not want to hang out with anyone who wants to do laudanum, especially in modern days. Like, someone who whips out laudanum nowadays is going to be very insufferable.
That's how I feel about whippets.
Cocaine came to my mind, and I wrote Cocaine wrote this movie because it did seem to me to have that vibe of the person who wrote this thinks they're spinning gold. Of, like, every scene yeah. seemed to be, like, and every line seemed like, yeah, that's the real heart of the matter.
I guess so, but I did enjoy the dialogue. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff, especially in the first half of the movie, like, just some of the stuff that was coming out of these people's mouths, and it was very rapid fire, and I was like, that's funny, that's cute, and, like, I don't know, they were just, I remember, like, just this, like, little throwaway line of, like, oh, are you gonna drink vinegar to mock the crucifixion or whatever? And then they move on. I'm like, and I actually, like, stopped, and I was like, that's a funny line, drinking vinegar to mock the crucifixion. Like, I don't know. Like, there were a bunch of, like, little things in here that I was amused by as far as the writing goes.
I agree. But not as much as the writer seemed to be amused himself.
This is that thing where it's like, is the writing like this because the characters are like this, or is the writer like this? Because again, these are, like, young poets, young romantics. They also think everything they're throwing out is fucking gold. Like, every line that Byron says in this movie is delivered either maniacally or with this, like, smug satisfaction that only, like, an elite British poet could possibly do.
Hey, and I'm not exactly totally shitting on it. I mean, it takes some chutzpah. It takes some real ovaries to, like, say, I'm going to write dialogue for fucking Lord Byron and Byron Shelley. Like, I'm going to make them quip and, like, you know, chat with each other. But I mean, of course, you know, that's what writers do, you know, to a greater or lesser extent. And so, yeah, there were a lot of, like, good stuff in there. But when it got into metaphysical, when they were extolling these death, this, like, these really huge thematic things, I often found them to be full of absolute nothingness.
They're just trying to.
Well, I mean, so much of it relies on this notion of a god, or whether that god will be happy or mad about something, or that, like, I think one of the lines is, you know, God is dead or God doesn't exist or something. And at the time, it would have been, like, so scandalous, but like it doesn't mean anything to me.
I broke it down. Oh, I broke it down that thank exact you. Thing, Angela, because I was like, this is done so dramatically and it means fucking nothing. God created us. We have to kill our creations before they kill us. And then someone says, but God already is dead. And they respond by, but we're raising the dead. And I'm like, tried to parse that about like what the argument through line.
I do have to push back a little bit. I think those lines are, everyone delivering those lines are like shirtless and screaming and covered in dirt.
Honestly, my point is like if this movie thinks that it's about like people going insane through opium, then yes, you're spot on. Right. But this movie is trying to be like, look at these fucking geniuses and their amazing, huge, big brains. I don't know. It was still very fun to watch. It was still very entertaining.
I don't know that we are supposed to be like, look at these geniuses. I really think that this is a movie that is about vibes more than substance, you know? Yeah.
I was watching this being like, these are real people and they probably have descendants, and like, what are their descendants thinking of their portrayal in this, you know, obviously very crazy and exaggerated movie? I didn't think they were being portrayed as geniuses necessarily. I thought they were actually being like sort of mocked in a lot of ways.
Really, that's interesting. Like because I did think that like the things they were saying were laden with meaning, with like, you know, with like, but I could be wrong. Just in my perspective on that.
Well, I think that the end where they're like, and you know, they have all the tourists, you know, and here's the house where all of this written. It's sort of like, to me, that it thumbs its nose at this notion of like historical landmarks, because what these tourists don't realize is that this loathsome, gruesome orgy drug den thing happened. No. You know, they're not thinking about that.
There was goo all over the house. Like,
to the few listeners who've watched this and have seen Zone of Interest,
wow.
There's a really like tremendously fascinating crossover between the end of it and I have just no one to speak to about it. So hit me up. I'm really curious about the sexuality and how you all thought about how the sexuality of this movie, how it was presented. Like, there were times when I was like, this is a sexy kind of movie. And the other times when I was like, oh, I don't know if this is a sexy movie. I'm really curious what you all thought.
It feels like an orgy filmed by someone who's never been to an orgy.
Oh, Ken Russell's been to an orgy. 100%. 100%. Many orgies. I mean, just parts of it reminded me very much of, like, I haven't seen Tommy in a very long time. I believe I was a teenager when I saw it, but there's a scene that is very much going to like stick in anyone's head where just the TV starts erupting with a huge geyser of baked beans. And there's a woman just writhing around in like a room filled with baked beans. And there were so many scenes of this that were just like super evocative of that to me, where it's like super like reminiscent of that, where it's like, am I supposed to be turned on here? Because I'm not, but it seems like it maybe wants me to be, but it also wants me to be repulsed. Repulsed and turned on? So there were many scenes that were like that.
This is the gothic milieu. I think that this is why this movie is so good at like creating, it's like a feels generator. Mm-hmm. It just throws these images at you that make you go, that's pretty goth. Ooh, that's pretty goth too. this is like drinking black coffee and smoking cigarettes at Denny's goth. This is damn.
Yeah, I mean, maybe like, yeah, I don't know, because there was like one or two moments where I was like, all right, that's kind of a sexy thing. But I think mostly the movie gave itself its own analogy with that first sort of dancing, like sexy puppet or whatever.
Where it was
like,
oh, yeah.
This is not enticing, and some weird, like, you know, uncanny valley level of like, turn me off. This is turning me off big time.
It reminded me of Thief of Baghdad too.
Yes, exactly. Me too. Yes.
Yeah, but I liked that because that section actually had far more mystery.
It was like playful.
It was
playful and had mystery,
right? Everything else to me was like gruesome and viscerally not sexy to me in terms of like all of the goo, the shit, the rats. None
leeches.
Of those things. Leeches.
I mean, okay. But
Yeah, I don't think he's making a neurotic movie. This isn't like Skinamax or whatever. This is Skin Russell.
I think he's trying to do repulsive sexuality. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought of David Cronenberg a lot during some of the scenes. Like obviously eye nipples.
I loved the eye nipples.
Mm-hmm. I love the eye nipples too. They were really well done. Really well done.
Truly.
Well, we don't have to go all through plot and stuff, impossible. But I really love to talk.
What is there to go through?
Well, I mean, like the one plot point, I guess, which is like, I would love to hear your all's thoughts on this because I think I don't have answers to myself. It's like, what happened? No, no. I mean, like everything sort of hinges around this like impromptu seance, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Where they all stare at a skull and, you know, for some reason, the really cute chick is like, has most of the camera. And then that like awakens something or brings something to life. Like, do you all have any sort of...
Because I thought I missed something.
No, No, I mean like, because then that sort of unleashes like the whatever...
They feel like they've unleashed like, you know, the essence of their fears or something like that.
Okay,
like,
that's helpful.
Like again, like I think what we're watching is like a shared like hallucination, like drug journey thing. Like everybody gets themselves super worked up during this stormy night in a Swiss villa, and this is the result of like, you know, a bunch of intelligent people, presumably intelligent people, trying to scare each other. But like that's it. They do the seance, and then the rest of the film is this kind of collapse into like unreality, I guess. Like it gets extra dreamlike and extra confusing. But I really think we're just watching people like have a freak out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you talk about that now, it makes me really, I want to watch it again because I feel like now I understand the filmmaker's purpose, which was really to give people an idea of what that altered state might be like within the framework of fear and the physicality of it. And from that perspective, I'm actually interested. And also, I really like the idea that this film is kind of like a counterpoint to all those like quaint British country home movies, you know, like even say Gosford Park, even though Gosford Park was many years later. But there's just no setup. Like it would have been very...
You mean The Shout? You're talking about The Shout.
That too. Okay, but yeah. I knew you were going to
throw that in. I felt that was a bit forced.
You led me there.
Yeah. And I feel like if there was just a better setup... for that would have been really satisfying and juicy to me as like watch this completely devolve from what is actually a, you know, these very rich, well-educated people. It just there's not enough of a transition from that. It's just like from the moment that they fall off the boat onto the island, it's just constant insanity.
Yeah.
I mean, leeches.
Yeah.
Leeches in the food, in so the spaghetti.
Well, that was a prank. Never gonna...
But yeah, I know, but it was still gross.
Yeah, great prank.
Very funny. Very funny doctor.
Wasting
it's a doctor
food.
Prank. It's a doctor prank.
But again, like I'm almost defending myself. Like, even if I did know who that guy was, the characterization of this like real seemingly weird slime ball who's just kind of hanging around, like really did feel like a fifth wheel. I don't know.
I mean,
there's always one.
I think that it's supposed to be that whatever they summoned is their inspiration for these classic horror stories that they brought into the world, right? I mean, like they refer to it as their creation and all that stuff. So
yeah,
I mean,
that's
ultimately what this is. And so like, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking like at the end, you know, where you do have this like tour guide going around being like, and so they're shared this villa and that's where they came up with these ideas. So it's like, you know, we have this conception of like they all just kind of like, you know, slept in the same house for, you know, a couple of weeks and came up with these ideas or whatever. But like, it's actually that they summoned it and I don't know, it's giving it sort of this grander mythos or whatever.
Does anyone actually do any writing in this movie?
No.
I feel like...
Who has time?
May did. Was sitting with some sort of... notebook at some point.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
I like your interpretation of them summoning up their fears and the sort of descent is them facing their fears. I think I was looking for something, and that works. I guess I was thinking maybe it's not that broad because there were like, I don't know why I'm trying to make sense of it. And that's my problem. That's my fault. But I mean, there's just like lots of things of like, what is the weird thing that lives out in the shed that it ends up riding the horse away from Polly trying to kill himself? Like there's like some sort of demon that's just around like that seems like there's some sort of haunting specter.
It's leaving cum everywhere.
Yeah. And like I was looking for like wondering if there are more direct themes that I'm missing. I really like all the simulacrums, like all of the toys and sort of like dolls around. And there was this one, like I thought a pretty fucking creepy moment of Shelley rushing at himself in a mirror and seeing this thing in a mask.
That was scary, yeah.
Scary, yeah. And so I was like, is there a thing with like double simulacrums, like it, which maybe there is too. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but I like that interpretation, Wizard, of this just being sort of summoning up their fears and spending the rest of a sweaty night facing them.
What's a sexier, weird horror movie is Monster Squad.
I haven't seen Monster
Squad. Never
seen
it, somehow.
That's like a kid's horror movie, actually, from like the 1990s.
It's weird that it was perfect for my age group, and I think it's weird that I've never seen it.
Oh, well, yeah.
Did you all have a favorite scare? I really did like the squatting imp.
Oh yeah, so good.
I filmed that and sent it to a number of people.
I didn't have a favorite. I wouldn't say this is a scare per se, but for me, like, this movie hits peak goth energy. There's the scene where Mary is, she's just like confronted Byron, I think, one of many confrontations. And she hears her, like, her dead son calling to her from behind the door. And then she opens the door and leans down over the railing. And there's a shot of her, like, illuminated from behind as she looks down and then looks down on this colorless, like, platinum blonde child. I was like, this is really gothic, like in the literary sense, not in the coffee and black black coffee and cigarettes way. In the literary sense, this is like peak gothic energy, and I'm loving it a lot. A lot of striking images, and I, you know, you kind of expect that from this director.
One thing that was scary for me was seeing one of the servants shucking fava beans, because one time I grew fava beans and they take up so much space, and then you have to like pick so much, like you get an entire bushel of them and you have to peel them all individually, and then you have to parboil them and then peel each individual seed again because there's a second husk.
It's very thick.
And then you end up getting a tiny little handful from an entire, like, you know, field of. And so just seeing those again was like, I'm never growing fava beans again. So
that was Ken Russell's
intention. They're so good at putting nitrogen back in the soil.
Yes, they are.
It's true.
I'll still eat them. I'm just not going to buy them or prepare them or grow them.
Have folks here read Frankenstein?
No.
No.
I mean, no. I did watch the sort of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
The Robert De Niro one?
Yeah, that was Robert De Niro.
It was Robert De Niro's the monster.
Was that Branagh?
Ken Branagh, yeah. And Helena Bonham Carter.
I mean, I remember at least at the time it was being touted as like, this is this is what the actual version of the story is.
Mary would have loved this.
She would have loved it. Bobby De Niro does a great monster.
Young Frankenstein, you know, that is the one that I am affiliated with. Yeah.
Wizard, have you read it?
I haven't read it. And so I feel like I've absorbed Frankenstein through culture in a million different ways. Many of the ways that we've all mentioned here. The movie posits that the one thing that I don't really care for, and like having not read Frankenstein, I really don't know how I can have this opinion, but I don't like that the movie seems to give a lot of the creative genesis for Frankenstein mm-hmm. to Shelley.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for that. I wrote that down as well.
And Byron, too. Like, Byron even comes up with different things. And I'm like, are they just stealing the glory here?
Yeah. They're spitballing. Yeah. Like, the movie has scenes of them, like, spitballing, like, what is the nature of man? What mm-hmm. could do this
lightning.
Or that? Lightning.
Are you writing this down, Mary? I said the word lightning.
And yeah, and I found that kind of detestable, you know? Like, I for the movie to portray, like, she's a celebrated writer in her own right, and so I feel, yeah, like, for the movie to portray her as kind of, like, just making notes while two very clever boys, like, come up with the story, like, I didn't really care for that.
Mm. Yeah.
And then the other thing is that she was inspired to write the story by, out of grief from her dead child. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a true thing. I don't know how anybody could possibly know that. But what do we think about that, knowing, you know, at least a little bit about the story of Frankenstein? What's the movie on about when it's like, oh, this lady writer was affected by a dead baby, as all tortured lady writers are? Or is that more goth energy?
I mean, the notion of losing a child is that... As one thing is you would do anything to bring back that child. Two is the second thing is you will berate yourself for anything having to do with possibly losing that child.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the Frankenstein story, it's interesting to me that there isn't really any children in it, indeed true.
Oh.
But it does seem like a way to... think about the issue and write about it without going directly into that vein. And if she did actually like do that writing based on that loss, she did an amazing job, because like, I don't know. Oh, sorry. Just thinking about child losses. That's derailed me.
Well, I mean, but like I had it written down, and this is, I think, something I'm going to think about going ahead of like, my understanding that this was written by a man was the fact that a lot of the women's pain, like the two women characters' pain was very external, and the men's pain seemed very internal. Like, things happened to the women, whereas we can't understand or comprehend the lengths of, you know, like, torment the men go to because it's all deep within them.
This
you
is
know?
Tortured romantic genius nonsense.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And that was something I thought about a lot with this. Mm.
But
like on the baby tip though, this also kind of feeds into what I was trying to say about looking for sort of themes or through lines with it, because at times through this movie, it seemed to be pretty interested in like the relationship between, I forget her name, the cute girl, what is her
Claire.
Name? Claire. Yeah. Like Claire, I guess, is pregnant and with, is it supposed to be Byron or Shelley's baby?
It's supposed to be Byron's baby, yeah.
But then there's like this, but I think it's supposed to be, Byron puts it in Mary's head that it's Shelley's baby or something. And the movie seems very interested in that. And I think there were a few lines of like the creations and like that I actually thought were pretty interesting. And it seemed to be that they were talking specifically about children and about, you know, the fetus growing in Claire's belly. Mm. But then the movie becomes very much not interested in that. I don't like it kind of hymns and haws. This is me still trying to like
birth
maybe
control
find...
people. The control. Things that people had to think about in romantic times because they didn't have birth control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. I don't know. Yeah, I have nothing more to say about that. I'm just trying to still find meaning in a movie that probably doesn't intend to have much I'm specifically looking for.
Eat it?
Yeah, I was like, did something happen with that whole oral sex thing?
I think Byron, like, I think that was the implication, was that he was eating, like, the child or a miscarriage or something like that.
That's definitely the implication.
Okay. I thought so too.
And
Ken Russell.
Yeah. Oh, Ken Russell. Ken Russell, you love weird shit, man. Yeah, right. You love weird images. Like, I don't know.
Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah, like it's just like these like lurid romantic with a capital R images. It's like a music video from the days of the golden age of MTV, but strictly for gothic literature. Mm-hmm. Just like, here's a bunch of wild shit. What do you guys think of all this wild shit?
Which, okay, you know, so what? Go ahead, Angela.
Oh no, go ahead. No,
I was just gonna say, like, I think there should be more movies like this, like where, like, not everything has to make a ton of sense. It can all just be like a lot of crazy wackiness. I'm gonna sort of spoil my What Else You Watching, but my What Else You Watching is Bo is Afraid, and like, honestly, this was reminding me a lot of Bo is Afraid. Like, I think Bo is Afraid
is a
better movie, but it's still a bunch of just like, what the hell is going on here? Crazy, weird exaggeration. Like, you're just along for the ride in a lot of ways, and I'm down with that. Like,
no, I am with you, and I like it's not that I want like pure through lines or whatever like that. This movie reminded me the most of something we watched, like Hour of the Wolf. This movie reminded me of Hour of the Wolf in that way, and I loved Hour of the Wolf. Like, I loved the sheer, you know, it, like. But again, it seemed Hour of Wolf, in my recollection, was like reinventing itself, whereas this movie seemed to stall out at just, okay, we're just running around this house and finding new doors to open. This movie also reminded me a little bit of Mother, but I think Mother was also a better movie.
I still haven't seen Mother. I would like to see Mother.
Yeah. You'll be fine if you never do, but I saw it 3 times in the theater.
Well, there you go.
Well, now I understand that, like, the what's that other movie we saw with Natasha Richardson in it with Christopher Walken?
Kindness of Strangers.
Yes.
That's where I knew her from.
Yeah. Okay.
Friend of the pod, so, Natasha Richardson.
And so, like, when I saw her in that movie, I was like, I don't understand why she's in this movie. I've never seen her in anything else being that erotic. And so now I know from this film where that comes from. You could do a double feature of these two films, I think, and be doing your audience proud.
So
the movie's
steamy.
Only grown in my estimation. I gave it a 13, and
what did I
deserve
give it?
Better.
Kindness of Strangers?
I've got it up right now. Yeah, you got it. You gave it a 6. You gave it a 6.
Yeah, I was better than that.
I was below 10, right?
Yeah. You were 9.
9, yes.
Listeners, you can follow along on the spreadsheet in your notes, in your show notes.
Indeed you can. Does anybody have any other thoughts about gothic? Something they want to throw in there?
I do want to talk about the music.
Yes, that was exactly mine. I just wanted to say the music is bad.
No. This was a vibe. This was a thing. Like, what it reminded me of was Clockwork Orange. I think the music is better in Clockwork Orange, but it reminded me of sort of going off that style where it's this super synth heavy music that just contrasts with the actual action of going on. And like, I don't know, in Clockwork Orange, I think it really works. And this one, it's like, I can see what they're going for. They're going for
and
that.
Then the drums kind of came in when the drums went heavy. Or just
now,
like,
you call them drums. They're in fact computer blips and bleeps. But I don't know. It was a bold choice, and I didn't hate it. Like, I get what they're going for. Like, they're doing this like period piece, and here's this music Incense. That's really like contrasting with it. Like, I don't know. I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it, but I found it oppressive at times.
It draws attention to
itself
a lot.
I was like, are we still doing the soundtrack? Like, people would be having conversations. People would, like, things would be happening. I'd be like, we're still doing the bloop, 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 bleeps and bloops, huh? Okay.
I didn't hate it.
I just didn't like it. Sorry, Angela.
It reminds me of, like, watching A Hard Ticket to Hawaii, but the gothic version.
So
yeah, or
gothic.
Actually, I mean, I'll just go ahead and ruin another one of my What Else You Watching is another surprise.
Oh my god,
but just as a contrast, I watched No Country for Old Men, which is a movie that I've seen 20 times. I love it. I haven't seen it in a couple of years, and I watched it with Noah, and they love music soundtracks. Like, they're always picking up and paying attention to soundtracks of movies. And they noticed something about that movie that I have never noticed in all my times of watching it, that there is not a single drop of music in that whole movie. There's no music in that movie. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Never noticed. Anyway,
maybe,
that's the opposite end of
maybe
the
it could be, what's that 1990s film, Dogma? It's a Dogma movie. It doesn't have any music. Could it be?
Ooh.
We should.
That's
we should
not diegetic, of course.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
All right. Well, I think we've reached the end of the road for Gothic.
Did we really talk enough about the eye boobs, though?
Well, you know, it's strange how, like, nobody mentioned the eye boobs in their intro. I was like, surely someone will mention the eye boobs, but nobody did.
I didn't want to ruin it for everybody.
Anyways, they are great. They're weird creepy.
Well done.
Yeah. Tickled me pink, I'll tell you that. All right, it's time to roll, people. Here at Crit Club, we do things a little bit differently. It's my Peter impression.
Yeah, it's a good one. It is.
We rate on a 1 to 20 scale because we love polyhedral dice, or really just the one, the 20-sided one. And, it lets us fine-tune and sound clever. So it's also the only role-playing thing that we really do on the show, which I love.
I know, which we are ridiculed for, by the way, but that's cool. Okay. And
bring
it.
Bring the haters. It's us and Taylor Swift. Haters, come one, come all. Peter, let's go backwards. Peter, what are you rolling on Gothic?
Yeah, okay. I was hoping. I guess I'm going to sit with an 11 on this. Like, I one thing I didn't talk about, which we don't need to go into more, is because this was my first sort of Ken Russell movie, and I found a lot of, like, style in it that I was like, I get this. This is, like, you know, some maybe David Lynch adjacent. Like, there's just, like, some real confidence and attitude towards shots, positions, framings, you know, images. And I was like, I don't know, for as much shit as I talked about this movie, like, I didn't dislike it at all. Again, I would watch it again right now because I did find it pretty intimately enjoyable. And so, like, I think 11 is good. Maybe by the end of other people rolling, I'll bump that up to a 12. But I'm going with 11 right now. And I'm very glad to have watched it. Thank you, Wizard.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. 11. Corey, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm similar. I enjoyed it. I don't think it's a great movie, but I enjoyed watching it. And I'm just going to give it a spooky 13.
Ooh, so scary. Angela, will your role be scarier?
I didn't like it that much. I wanted to like it. I'm disappointed. I was slightly titillated. I'm still kind of having a hard time because I want to give it something under 10, but I don't know that I hated it. I didn't hate this movie. And I liked it certainly more than whatever that other movie we were just talking about and that I gave like a 6 or something.
Hour of the Wolf.
Yeah, I think for me, 5 and below is when you start getting into like truly hate territory.
Angry feelings.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it an 11 because I really liked the production of it. I thought that
Except for the colors used.
The sound was a little kooky. I liked it far better than The Hour of the Wolf. So, yeah, it gets an 11. Legs 11.
Legs 11.
What about
11.
You, Wizard?
Me? Oh. I liked this movie. I didn't like all of it all the time, but I liked this movie, folks. And so I'm going to say it's a 15.
Wow.
Yeah.
Seems right.
Amazing.
Sounds about right. Well, that's our thoughts on Ken Russell's Gothic. If y'all had thoughts on it, listeners, I know you're out there. I know you're listening in your car, in your shed, in your other shed.
Giant Swiss mansion.
Your giant Swiss villa. But if you have any thoughts on this movie, if you have any thoughts on us, if you have any thoughts whatsoever, we would absolutely love to hear them, as long as they're nice thoughts and not creepy, weird thoughts. Although this week we're inviting creepy, weird thoughts in honor of Ken Russell's Gothic.
Be stalkery.
I'll read the creepy ones if they get too bad. Reach out to us. We are at, somebody help me, CritClubPodcast@gmail.com,
CritClubPodcast on Instagram, which is sorely neglected, and then also on Threads, which is also sorely neglected. Sorry, everybody.
I think we could do really well on Blue Sky. I think that, like, I think that's where our people are. It's public
now.
No,
they're open now.
Oh, they're open.
It just opened this week. Yeah.
No, I can set that up.
My invite codes are useless. No. Anyways, reach out to us, folks, on the social media and let us know what you thought about this movie or any other. That is it for me this week, but I am intensely curious as to what we'll be watching next week. I believe it's an Angela pick. Angela?
It is.
Thrill us.
I am thrilled to share with you that we are going back to a Mr. Thomas Vinterberg, who did The Celebration, which we talked about a few weeks ago. And we're going to watch his 2003 movie starring Claire Danes and Joaquin Phoenix called It's All About Love. And it is a film that goes to the year 2021. So at that time it was the future, but now it is the past. When the Earth is devastated by continuous climate changes and sudden waves of frost. Wow, that sounds dangerous. But there's some sort of love story in there. I'm not going to ruin it for all of you. You can look it up on Wikipedia. It's all about love. We're going to watch it next week. You should watch it and tell us what you think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do those things. That sounds great. That sounds awesome. I know we don't like to date ourselves, but we should point out that today is Valentine's Day, and we've talked a lot about love today.
I love you all.
I love you all. And we love y'all for listening, and we'll be we'll be back next week with some cool stuff. But right now, we're going to mosey on into the final part of the show, which is, what else you watching? I'm going to go full chaos this time, Corey. What else you watching? You've already dropped
it's
it.
It's all right. Yeah, I've already dropped it. I mean, I guess the big thing is Beau's Afraid. I was staying away from this movie for a little while until I was in a good headspace because I had heard that it was like a three-hour-long panic attack, and it is absolutely not that at all. Like
it was for me. Speak for yourself, sir.
Okay, sure, very good. Was it Ari Aster? His movies can be like really deeply affecting, and like Midsommar I saw once and I'm still scared of it to go like watch it again because it affected me like so profoundly and left me just like feeling icky for like a week. Beau's Afraid was just a cartoon comedy. It was just a completely off the wall, silly, bizarre, like whatever. I don't know. And then our friends posted like this explainer video about it. And like I had picked up on some of the stuff that was in this explainer video. And it's not like this movie can be like explained, but it's at least pointing out a lot of like the symbolism and stuff in it. And it truly made me enjoy it more. So it's like, I liked this movie and it was definitely a vibe. And, but it was just not what I was expecting at all. And it was this pure like weirdness where I almost wished he would have like leaned in even more into the weirdness, because for like the first half of the movie, Frida and I were both just wondering, it's like, okay, what are the rules of this universe? What is this? Is this actually real? Is that actually real? Is it? And so like, I think it would have like made it to where we weren't worrying about that as much, about trying to figure out what was going on, if he had done a little bit more to kind of show you like, don't worry about trying to figure this. There's no big trick that you're trying to like figure out with this movie or whatever. Like, just strap in for the ride. Peter, I see you making faces.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Like Midsommar, I've watched that movie at least 10 times, and I will watch it at least, like, honestly, I've said it, I think I've even said on this podcast, it's a very comforting movie to me for some reason. Like, I really, truly love that movie. This movie really upset me. Like, Beau Is Afraid really, like gave me a panic attack and really upset me. Like, really got in my core soul. Huh. And I think that was, like, the intention. This movie, like, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, this movie was Requiem for a Dream, in a way, for me, personally. This was, like, this is a guy who just wants to put other people in this headspace and, like, gleefully, like, cackles when it happens.
I mean, that's all of his movies.
I disagree, though. I really disagree. I've also watched Hereditary multiple times, and I'll watch that again as well. Like, there's something about, like, the sheer amount of, like, make someone feel unsafe repeatedly. It was, like, a lot of this, like, and again, a lot of it's just my own trauma. Like, the first part about all of the city stuff was me living in Brooklyn during COVID. was, like, honestly pretty much exactly a lot of fears and shit that I had that kind of were going along at that time. I don't know. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I thought you would. I thought you'd, like, not... I thought your hard exterior would be able to weather that movie more than mine did.
Aww.
That's it for me.
Right on.
What was your other one? You had
No Country for Old Men, but it's that we don't need to retread that. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, maybe I should put this in a, like, I saw recently somebody did a study. I don't know, whatever. I was a journalist. I don't know how much I seriously take these things. But some pathologist, some study was done of pathologists, of like criminal pathologists, of like 200 some odd, 400 some odd movies to find the most realistic criminal, and Javier Bardem's the character was like the most realistic criminal depiction.
Yeah, it wasn't so much. It was like psychotic, particularly.
Yeah, sorry.
He was psychotic. Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. And there's a lot of like, you know, glorifying of law enforcement and all that stuff in it or whatever. Like, I don't care. Like, I just, that movie is so much fun to watch, and it is so.
I haven't watched it in a long time.
Just so creative and just, I love it. Love it. That's a comfort movie for me. I mean, I'll just put
it. Yeah, I need to watch it again. It's been a long time.
Okay. Angela, what else you been watching?
Well, based on your recommendation, I started watching Delicious in Dungeon. And it is so sweet and delightful and funny. I giggle watching this. It makes me feel warm and happy after every episode. And they're releasing new episodes every week. So, you know, you can catch up. There, I think there's 6 or 7 episodes. I love the character who joined their little party, who is a master chef who has been cooking stuff in the dungeon for years and planting vegetables with golems. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy. It's one of the best things on TV right now, in my humble opinion. I'm also reading Neal Stephenson's 7 Eves, which is blowing my mind. The first page is probably like the best example of how to suck someone into a story in science fiction, where basically it's like he looked up and the moon blew up, and it was pretty flippin', you know, rocketing from like that page after. Huge fan of Neal Stephenson. I love his Baroque Cycle. If you're looking for some science fiction, hard science fiction, really that goes deep into like engineering and you know, what could happen if the Earth was immediately imperiled and we had 2 years to try to save what is called our heritage, our human heritage? Major recommendations. It's horrifying and amazing. Really great book. And the last thing I have watched was Danger Diabolic last night.
Oh, yeah.
The 1968 theft movie. Which
John Philip Law.
Yeah, who I still have to do that rabbit hole and find out if Jude Law is related to that law, because there's some similar, their appearance is quite
forehead
similar.
Forehead structure. They're both forehead actors.
Mm. And that was fun and silly. Like, it kind of hit my James Bond desire to watch James Bond, but without all the bullshit. It gets a little repetitive. It's a little boring. Like, how many times can you get surrounded in a heist and then, you know, disappear? And the ending is a little strange, but still worth watching.
Nice. Yeah, Danger Diabolic is a fun little movie. Very, very of its time and wild. Peter, what else are you watching?
Yeah, I watched some things, didn't I? I had to go to the Bay Area for a long work trip all week last week, and so got in very late on Friday, and I was able, and I feel very privileged, to spend like my entire Saturday lying on the couch and drawing, and rewatched all of True Detective, the first season of True Detective.
Hey.
As you did recently, I was able to watch 8 hours of television it felt great. That really held up. I was very surprised how much that's still a banger of a season of a show. And I did start Jodie Foster : Night Country. Didn't expect it to be as going hard into some genre as it's going, and maybe the first season of True Detective still
holds
up.
It's also just such a slow burn.
Oh, it's so good.
The Night Country.
I see.
I've only seen two episodes.
Yeah, I mean, we're on board and we're gonna watch it and, you know, keep going with it. But it's, you know, I think back to like what has happened so far in like 4 episodes or whatever that's out now, and it's like not a ton. It's just kind of a vibe.
There's only two
Wait
episodes left, so
compare that to, I kind of disagree, and maybe it's just because I rewatched the first season of True Detective. Like, those two in tandem, nothing happens in True Detective.
Really?
Like, they go interview people, but I mean, like, I guess it's not a spoiler of like the Night Country is like, it's a different show. That is not the same sort of just like meditative, moody, you know, barely a slight procedural.
It was, to be fair, it was lumped into the True Detective series after, yes, like it I was saw not that. Made it was not made as a true detective series. It was HBO thought it needed a little brand recognition. So
that's,
it is
I, when, I recognize
it is a different
that.
Show,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I recognize that. But it was I guess I correlated them to
is it.
Is it
the same makers? But the same writer
no.
director guy?
It's not,
oh, not
no.
at all.
Nick
okay.
Pizzolatto. Yeah, it's not Nick Pizzolatto at all. It's okay. Which is probably fine because it seemed like the first season was like a one off of like whoops. And also Cary Fukunaga, whatever the director. Fukunaga did an incredible job. Anyway, I also spent Sunday watching a lot of movies and laying on my couch more. Less, but I still laid on my couch a lot. And I watched a few movies that I was meaning to see, one of which I just finally ended up watching. I've been trying to watch it for like 20 years. And I watched Paprika. The
Satoshi Kon movie?
Yes.
I've been wanting to see that.
Yeah, I've been wanting to see it since I remember it being released in Baxter Avenue Theaters in Louisville, Kentucky, and me being like, oh boy, I bet I'd love that. Turns out I did love that.
Have you
it's
seen
great.
Tokyo Godfathers?
No, I've not seen any of his movies.
Yeah,
this is
great.
Paprika is my first, and it's his last one. He died of cancer shortly after this.
Yeah.
But it's a real good, I guess, sort of like near science fiction, but also like presenting visuals of chaos done in a truly kind of unique way in which I've never seen before. Great. Really, really enjoyed Paprika. Like, it's always been on my list and never pulled the trigger until now, and I'm very happy I did. And those are two. I also have one shout out because I was kind of going through the Criterion Channel to look for what I would maybe want to pick. And I saw that they brought back Watermelon Woman for Black History Month. If listeners, you want to watch a really solid movie that I think we all really enjoyed, Watermelon Woman is one of ours. I think that was our episode number 6. Mm-hmm. And you can watch that and listen back to our episode.
It also got a Criterion release a year or two ago.
Oh, cool.
So there's probably like extras and stuff.
I think about that movie a lot. Yeah. Go watch that movie, listeners, and then listen to our episode number 6 about what we thought about Watermelon Woman. That's all I got. Wizard, what else have you been watching?
Not a lot for me. I've been watching the most recent season of True Detective. This show makes no sense. And they've got like one episode to wrap it up and make it make sense or whatever. And I believe the last time we discussed this, I was like, yeah, I'm having a good time, but I am now very much concerned that the show makes no sense.
Is it just going to be one season, or are they going to stretch it?
I have no idea what they're going to do. If they stretch it, then it doesn't make any sense. It makes even less sense because, like, how long are you going to stretch out this mystery? And what about True Detective, the anthology series, where every season was a different, you know, like it doesn't make sense. Nothing makes sense. The whole show doesn't make sense. I'm on board till the end, ride or die. Cause there's still some stuff here that I'm about, but listeners, I'm concerned. The True Detective season 4 makes no sense. Is
but
it
we
a ghost?
Just watched a movie that makes no sense.
But within the world of its laudanum-fueled hysteria, it makes sense. Is True Detective seasons like? Is there? Are there ghosts? Are there not ghosts? What's happening? Another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are Anyways. Things that they probably should have established at the end of episode 1 that they still have not established.
And they would have never done that in season 1 of True Detective.
So I've been watching that. I'm trying to think. I don't think anything else. I want to give a shout out to, I want to give a shout out to a book that I've been reading, that I really, really have been enjoying called Kings of the Wild by Nicholas Ames. This is not deep reading, folks. This is a fun fantasy book, about a party of like a party of adventurers well past their prime. They get the band back together for one last desperate quest to save one of the band or party members' daughters, who's like walled up in a city of the under siege by an army of the undead and monsters and cool shit. Honestly, this is just a super fun read. It like likens being a in a party of adventurers, like in this world. Being a party of adventurers is kind of like being a metal band, and they make a lot of they like vibe with that a lot. They talk about like taking the band on the road and like doing tours and stuff like that. It's funny. It's not complicated, and I've just really been enjoying it. So check out Kings of the Wild. It's the first book in a series. I think the second one is out. The third one is probably forthcoming, or maybe it's not, because that's how fantasy publishing works. Promise a trilogy, deliver to die a rich man. Anyways, that's it for me, and I guess that's it for all of us. I mean, that's it. That's Crit Club for today. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us for a gothy time. We will be back next time with Angela.
With It's All About Love, which is probably like the most Angela movie title you could possibly ever have.
That's because Angela's about love. We love her for it.
Oh, thanks.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for coming in. Check it out, Crit Club. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Wizard. Thank you, listeners.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.